Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Welcome to another episode of Crimes NZ. I'm Jesse Mulligan, and a warning first up that this episode deals with child abuse, so listener discretion is advised.
Coming right at the very end of a very long trial, that was the very dramatic, you know, evidence on the last day that I think really swayed the jury into the interesting verdicts that they gave.
In 1991, 2-year-old Delcelia Whittaker was killed in what the presiding judge described as one of the most disturbing cases of child abuse to come before the High Court. In this episode, former North and South journalist David McLaughlin tells Karen Hay about covering the case.
Well, at the time, during the 1990s, I had very young children of my own, and working as a journalist, I had quite an interest in children's welfare. I analysed quite a number of the deaths year by year of young children. There were about 8 a year, consistently year after year, of children dying in the care of, in their family household. But in almost every case, the death was caused by a person who was not the natural parent. It was mainly a new man who'd come into a woman's life where she, was living in relatively straitened circumstances and so on, and would take in, form a relationship with people who were not particularly loving of her own child, and a lot of cases, violently abused the child, and about 8 times a year killed them. In the case of Delcelia, she stood out as one where the natural mother was involved in the mistreatment of her, as well as Eddie Smith, who was Tanya Whittaker's new partner. He wasn't Delcelia's natural father, but Tanya was her mother.
Well, let's go back to the start when Delcelia was born. What were her mother's circumstances?
Tanya was 19 years old, not hugely educated at the time. She was in Northland. She enjoyed partying. She met a even younger man, Peter Lafa Alley, who was 17, in a sort of an entertainment, a video parlour in Northland, and formed a relationship with him and got pregnant. Delcelia then was born. They were both quite young. They weren't prepared for a baby. They lived with Tanya's older sister, Aroha, and Aroha came to be sort of the mother figure for the young baby. Aroha then later had a child of her own and couldn't look after Delcelia all the time. So Delcelia was passed from, sort of family member to family member, and occasionally back to Tanya, who by this stage had moved down to South Auckland, to Mangere, and had met Eddie Smith and formed a relationship with him. And so from time to time, Delcelia would come and stay with Tanya and Eddie. Now, those two then went on and had another child together, so they had one of their own, and as well as Delcelia. Remember, Delcelia was very, very young. She would come and stay with them. Other family members would be concerned about the state Delcelia was in, sort of bruising or not having nappies changed and things like that, and they would take Delcelia for a while, sometimes a month at a time or more. And then she'd go back to Tanya and Eddie. So she was, a poor little thing being passed from, one sort of person to another quite a bit of the time, as well as living with her mother.
So skipping forward to the night that the police were called, Tanya rang the police.
Yes, she and Eddie had gone out to a party that afternoon, and they returned in the evening, and Delcelia was lying dead on the bed. Tanya, this was the days before mobile phones, and so Tanya went down to a, I think it was a video shop, and called the police from there and just reported. I think the recording of the 111 call showed a very matter-of-fact way that, I've come home and found my child dead. And can I have an ambulance, please? And an ambulance officer came and found Delcelia, dead, but in, in very, very poor condition, and called the police, who then came too.
She had been home alone, and she was how old, two?
Yes, she was two. It was interesting. Tanya and Eddie took their joint child with them to the party, but left Delcelia at home. Delcelia would have been, too ill to have gone anywhere, really. A lot of the court case against both Eddie and Tanya was about the, failure to get help for Delcelia. She had a number of injuries and really was too ill to be moved. She couldn't have gone to the party with them, and so Tanya and Eddie went to the party. They were there for a few hours and came back, and she was dead by then.
And in court, how did Whittaker justify leaving Delcelia at home at that age, or any age, as a child?
I don't think that she, particularly justified it. Delcelia had been passed, as I'd said, from one family member to another for most of her 2 years of life. And this was one of the short occasions, although I think about the longest, that she had been living with Tanya and Eddie. And, they just went to a party. It was what they did. They enjoyed partying. Tanya kept a very detailed and very lucid and well-written diary, which I, at the time, read from cover to cover. And it was clear from reading her diary that she liked partying. And a lot of the diary was about the partying that she and Eddie went out to. One of her favourite phrases was, "It's time for party, hearty." And so this was just another of the many parties that they went to.
How long did the court case last?
The court case went for, I think from memory, about 5 weeks.
It's a very long time, and to sit through, because the evidence in this case is a bit harrowing to get into, and especially in any detail at all. But can you sum it up for us?
Yes, there were charges against both Tanya and Eddie. They were both charged with the murder of Delcelia, the manslaughter of Delcelia, and the neglect of Delcelia, and the failure, what they called failure to provide the necessities of life, charges associated with not getting help for a very ill and badly injured child. Initially, the police weren't going to charge Tanya with murder or manslaughter. They had assumed that Eddie was responsible for the injuries that had caused Delcelia's death. But as they investigated it, they discovered that there were injuries on Delcelia that were consistent with having been made by a woman. And Tanya herself admitted to mistreating Delcelia and not treating her for the injuries she had. And Tanya's own diary then had quite a number of quite graphic quotes where it said, "I hit Del C very badly today, and I really must stop hitting Del C," which made it quite clear that, to the prosecution that she'd been involved in the injuries as well. So the charges against her were stepped up to manslaughter and murder as well.
So the diary was used as evidence, obviously.
Yes, it was quite an important piece of evidence in the court case. Initially, Tanya was going to give evidence against Eddie, and she still went on to do that because it emerged that Delcelia had also been sexually abused fairly consistently. I don't think that formed part of the charges that came up in court, actually, in the end. But Tanya was quite angry about that and was going to be a witness against Eddie. But the prosecution decided to charge Tanya with the more serious crimes as well, just because of the evidence that she'd partaken in the the mistreatment of Delcelia. But in the court itself, Tanya and Eddie had separate lawyers, and the basic evidence was that Tanya, through her lawyer, blamed Eddie for all of the mistreatment that led to Dalcelia's death, and Eddie, through his lawyer, blamed Tanya for it all. And so they, you know, consistently blamed each other, but took neither accepted that they were responsible.
How did they both plead not guilty, did you say?
Yes, Eddie pleaded guilty to, you know, lesser charges to do with the mistreatment, but pleaded not guilty to the murder and manslaughter, while Tanya pleaded not guilty to all of the charges. There were five altogether, you know, three mistreatment, one, and murder and manslaughter.
Did she accept any culpability?
She had, with the interviews with the police. She also, when asked why she hadn't taken any action to help Dalcelia and get treatment for you know, what were quite apparent injuries to her, you know, she told the police that she, you know, had been mistreated by Eddie, and that Eddie, you know, beat her, and she was scared that she'd get beatings by Eddie if she sought any help from Dalcelia. She'd also told the police that, it's come back to me now, this part of it, she had gone to the party with Eddie because Eddie had threatened to waste her with a steel bar if she didn't go to the party with him. But that came, as far as the jury was concerned in the trial, crashing down on the very last day of the case, when somebody who I recall was at the party went along to Eddie's lawyer, Christopher Harder, with a videotape of the party. And that was played right at the very end of the trial. The lawyers had been giving their summing up, but this was regarded as dramatic new evidence, this video of the party. And so that was played to the jury on the, you know, the very end of the trial. And it was quite a long video, and it showed a very happy Tanya and a very happy Eddie, you know, liaising with each other, having fun with each other, and all the other people at the party just having a generally good time. And Tanya didn't appear in the video to be scared at all. And coming right at the very end of a very long trial, you know, that was the, you know, the very dramatic, you know, evidence on the last day that I think really swayed the jury into the interesting verdicts that they gave.
Why did that evidence come so late in the trial?
It was just that somebody who, we're talking a few years ago now, but had been at that party and had not believed the evidence that Tanya had given about being going to the party because she was scared of being beaten. The video had shown that she was quite happy there, so she went to Eddie's trial lawyer, who, you know, took the video to the prosecutor, and it was played to the jury at the last day because it was regarded as being so important.
And what about Eddie Smith? Did he admit his behaviour in all of this?
No, he pleaded guilty to the mistreatment of Dalcelia, but he denied that he had caused the very serious injuries that led to Dalcelia dying, and said that Tanya had caused those. Tanya said that Eddie had caused those, and that the more minor mistreatment that she had taken part in and the failure to get help for Dalcelia was because she was afraid of Eddie. I think that the jury were, you know, they couldn't tell who to believe, with each side equally blaming the other, and so they found both of them guilty of manslaughter.
As you said, David, you read the diary cover to cover. What else came out in that diary about their relationship to each other and just how they were as people?
Tanya exhibited quite a bit of affection in the diary for Eddie. It was also quite clear, you know, that he would beat her up. He had quite a temper. The first beating he gave her was in her diary about 2 weeks after they'd met. You know, it was one of these relationships where she really seemed to be deeply fond of him, and he would get into a rage from time to time, not daily, but regularly, and beat her. And yet then the next page would be, you know, how wonderful it was, you know, being with him. A very large number of the entries are about the, you know, what she described as her great sex life with Eddie. It was... you know, there's very graphic sections in the diary about that, and other things about, you know, it was, you know, the parties that they went to and going out shopping and buying him new clothes. And so it seemed like, one of these very sad relationships of, young people from disadvantaged background, getting into a violent relationship, having a child that they're not really equipped to, care for, and it just sort of went downhill.
What was his background, Eddie Smith's?
Eddie was, he'd driven trucks and things like that. He'd always been in work. He'd been a salesperson of some kind. He apparently had the what used to be called the gift of the gab for selling things. It was quite an ordinary kind of background, but both he and Tanya seemed to be hard working people. They'd saved enough money to, in about 19, so not that long after they met, they'd had enough money for a deposit on a house, and so they'd been able to buy a house in Auckland. So they had that sort of commitment to each other. They had a child together, and at the very time of Dalcilia dying, Tanya was very pregnant with the second child by him.
And what did the jury find?
Well, the jury found them both guilty of manslaughter. I think from all my looking at wires that because of the way they had blamed each other, and both had very eloquent lawyers. Tanya had Frank Hogan, Eddie had Chris Harder. They were both very well-known lawyers in Auckland. They were always in the media. They were exceptionally good lawyers who worked very hard for their clients. And the jury could see that both of them were involved in Dalcilia's death. They weren't prepared to say that one or the other had committed murder, so they found them both guilty of manslaughter.
And what was the sentence for them?
Well, this was the very interesting thing. The judge who heard the trial, he then died. And so another judge, Justice Henry, who was a very experienced Auckland judge, did the sentencing, and he'd obviously had to read through the whole transcript of the trial and so on to be able to then give a sentence in a case that he hadn't heard. He said that it was one of the most wicked pieces of child abuse that had ever been there, and that the sentence had to reflect that. He gave what I described at the time as a clever sentence. With manslaughter, you don't necessarily have to go to jail, and you can get a sentence up to a life imprisonment for it. It depends on the degree of the manslaughter. This judge sentenced them both to 16 years jail, which I thought was a very significant figure, because at the time, anybody who was sentenced to life for murder, the normal parole period back then in 1990 was 10 years in jail. And so with the manslaughter sentence, they were automatically able to get parole after two-thirds of the sentence. And so the 16-year sentence meant that they were effectively sentenced to 10 years in jail, which is the same time they would have been in jail for if they'd been found guilty of murder in 1990. So I thought that was the judge making a statement himself, that he thought that they were both guilty of murder by giving them a sentence that equated to that.
Well, thanks for listening to Crimes NZ, hosted by me, Jesse Mulligan. There are plenty more back episodes of this series on the RNZ website, rnz.co.nz, and it's on Spotify, iHeartRadio and Apple Podcasts, along with all RNZ's great podcasts. You can check out the new season of the Aotearoa History Show there. It looks at a variety of events that have shaped our nation, from pandemics to gold rushes. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.